Today on the Rights and Wrongs podcast, I am joined by college advisor Katie Ahashi, who will be discussing many of the truths and misconceptions of either starting or restarting your journey into higher education. We will be talking from our personal experiences as both students and working as staff, and how it's all right to not know what you want to do with the rest of your life right this minute, how college is not always exactly how books, television, and movies portray it, along with some advice that we wish we knew when we first started off, things to look out for. I hope you enjoy this week's episode of the Rights and Wrongs podcast. So welcome to the Rights and Wrongs podcast, a podcast where we talk about rights, privileges, and misconceptions. Today I am joined by Katie Ahashi, and we will be speaking on issues of community college advising, some misconceptions of community colleges, and like just a lot of those nuances that are lost. But you are also the host of the Wonderful World of Disney Villains podcast, which is just an amazing thing going. But I'll let you introduce yourself. I think it probably stole a lot of it.
Yeah, so like you said, I'm Katie Ahashi, the podcast host of The Wonderful World of Disney Villains, where I monologue to myself about the social identities and oppressions of Disney characters, specifically villains. I've been a college academic advisor for almost 6 years now at a community college. I should be specific, not a university, not an Ivy League, not a charter school, not K-12. Community college. What else? I am very heavy in the equity and inclusion work on campus and for the state of Washington. I'm my college's representative for the state in that area. I do a lot of workshops. That's kind of how I started the podcast. So I did a lot of workshops about Disney villains in professional development settings. Like, what if this villain was your student? How would you help them in all of their insecurities, barriers to success, and other. So that's kind of where the podcast came from, if for any of those who may want to know. And yeah, that's kind of the main points, I would say, the highlights. And I'm a new mom. I should probably say that too. I have an 8-month-old.
Oh, congrats. So, I think I said that before, yeah. But...
yeah, so, I mean, yeah. That's why I've been up since 5.
No, it's funny too when you talk about the whole entire, like, if these Disney villains were your students, I feel like every teacher has probably had a scar in their classroom. Everyone's definitely had the evil stepmother in their classroom.
Like, oh, yeah.
There's certain tropes that you have had. I don't think there's pertinent spells everywhere. But for the first thing that I'd like to ask, because like, this is a big thing we always do on the Rights and Wrongs podcast, is we always open up with buzzwords. I mean, buzzwords being words that are overused, misused. Are there any that you think that are in the field of community college or higher academia in the States or across the world from your understanding?
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't have experience in every state, so I can't really talk to everywhere, but at least for Washington, yeah, definitely, especially in like my immediate campus circle, I would say, like the whole term of like student loan, student debt, and what that really means and like what that entails, how do you go on this, like do you or do you not, you know, go into that trajectory and other. That's probably a big one across the nation. For me, I feel like diversity, equity, and inclusion, which are literally the words I just used, are big ones, at least for where I am. Also, anti-racist. I feel like that is, and I don't know if I'm cutting out because my signal seems to be off.
Oh, you're fine on mine.
Okay. Anti-racist, because at least for us, and I know a lot of other colleges, you know, we all say we are an anti-racist institution. We are striving to be anti-racist in everything that we do with everyone who works there. But sometimes I feel like that word is overused, to the point where it just kind of seems like you're saying it for show at that point, and you're not being sincere about like really striving and working and learning, unlearning, and relearning like all the oppressions and barriers for other identities in America and just, you know, anywhere really. And so I just feel like I hear it to the point where it's like, are we though? And are you really trying? Or are you just saying that for like, you know, the good vibes and so people come and, you know, and other. So that's kind of one that's been more recent with, you know, COVID and Black Lives Matter and the election and other. So that's, I don't know if anybody else has heard that one, but that one is one where I am always on the fence about that term, anti-racist.
Well, I agree because the anti-racist thing also gets really confusing because, like, I think it'd be better to say, like, non-exclusive if you're trying to go with it because, like, now, like, once you say, like, I'm anti-racist, okay, define racist. Well, someone's against someone of race. Like, now you have to define race, which I find confusing because, like, something I found as a shocker when I moved to the UK is what you should term as white is much different mm-hmm. than what is white in the United States. Like when you apply for a job here, it's not, I'm used to applying out white non-Hispanic on all U.S. job applications, but here it's like, oh, white, okay, and then everything has a subgenre, white Welsh, white British, white Irish, white Scottish, white British, like, and then like French, German, like other, but then like people will make a comment here, they're like, oh, well, they're not white, like, but they're Polish, like, yeah, they're not white, like, Poles aren't white, like, you get so confused, so when you talk about that, and then you'd be like, oh, I'm not, somebody like, and I've heard and this is like statements I've heard when people say, like, oh, I'm not racist, like, towards Asians. I just don't feel comfortable around Koreans or something like that. I'm like, because, like, they're seeing Asian as that, but I'm like, yeah, you're being...
I remember that happening once, and I was like, did you skip geography? Someone asked me once in high school, they were like, you know, what is your background or something generic. And I was like, oh, I'm Korean. And they were like, I thought you were Asian. And I'm like, it's all under the same umbrella.
You can hit that with so many different things. One of the ones that I always get confused is like, oh, I'm not Christian, I'm Catholic. And it's just, but you follow Christ. I think that's like the problem with labels is that, and that's the problem with racism, is when people throw that out there is the term, whenever you say like anti-racist, but it's like, because then you have people that are trying to throw the reverse racism. I know this is a whole different cause, but like this is, the funny thing is like, this is kind of the importance of college.
I literally looked up because I know you sent me like think about buzzwords, and I literally looked up like the top buzzwords in education, or like the top buzzwords that you should know in when you go to a college, and it was like diversity, equity, feminism, intersectionality, like all of these, I guess you would quote unquote use as like diversity inclusion related terms, which I totally agree with, but also, like, those are just things that you should know in life, not just college.
Yeah, and that's totally a confusing, because I would even think about that being a buzzword in, like, academia, but it's so true when you're dealing with a lot of it, because you do have a lot of different studies, because you, like, it's also, like, I like to say non-exclusive, because you do have women's studies, you do have African studies, you do have Asian studies, and then you have all this, and then people, like, I've always heard people, like, well, you have all these, but you don't have white studies. I'm like, that's just called most of history. Like, that's
just called everyday life.
that's white history is just what we like to call history, but, and I'm not trying to say, like, that in a white supremacist way, it's just, that's just the way.
No, and I actually saw, I was on Instagram this morning, and there was, somebody had posted something saying, like, you know, when you have to have a whole curriculum based on your culture, your history, your language, your music, etc., you know that, you know, that means something else, too. And like, you know, it shouldn't have to be that way, but it is.
Well, and the best way I try and say this is because, like, it's exclusionary because of the fact that if you want to take away from the race thing, it's sad that we have to do an entire subgenre in history to just focus on women, which make up 50% of the population, no matter what culture you're in, but you have to have a women's studies. And it's like, how many amazing women in history do you just not learn about because
the most of them.
Yeah, because people that wrote the history books back in the day didn't think it was important. It's kind of crazy looking, like, I was rewatching the live action version of Mulan, and like the whole entire thing was like, oh, this is a nice story, but the thing that's crazy about it, Mulan was a real person. It's nothing like the movie. Like, as soon as they found out she was a woman, they're like, okay, she's still an awesome warrior and great general. Like, she retired as a general in the Chinese military as a but of course, like, you had a
but let's make it a musical, and
I was upset there was no Mushu, I have to be honest. Yeah. Like, that's just part of the
movie. No Mushu, no grandma, no singing.
Yeah, and, like, that's one of the best songs in that. Like, you're in the boot camp era for so long, like, we're not going to, like, make a man out of you, which I know that's a very, like, toxic masculinity thing, but it's still a great song.
Most of the songs in that I've noticed watching the animated, I'm like, oh, the matchmaker song and, like, the getting her dolled up. And I'm like, oh, that is so, oh, no. Oh, I can't. I just cringe so much.
But like, I think it is important when you talk about that, because we were talking about education, like, about that. It is such, like, a touchy subject with people because there are, and, like, here's the thing, I'm not going to lie. It's, like, a lot of white cultures have also been destroyed. Like, it's hard to find Celtic history in a lot of times. And, like, the Gaelic languages were destroyed. And people are like, yeah, they were oppressed too. And it's like, yeah, they were. Like, it's not saying that's a sad thing. But they're always, even when it was getting destroyed, there was always records of it for the most part. Where a lot of other cultures were now finally getting digging.
Yeah, they were erased.
Yeah, and that's, Totally. The one thing I also wanted to say for a buzzword, which I don't think you probably would have thought of, which I didn't realize was an academic issue until moving to Europe, is I'm sure many of my European listeners are here. They don't even know what a community college is.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So,
yeah, I guess there's a few. So community college, trade school would be another one.
They have trade schools here. I think the problem they get confused with community college, because community college is a state school, but like in the UK, most schools are state schools. Like, University of Glasgow is a state school, even though it's an Ivy League school by standards.
Yeah.
Because it's owned by the UK or owned by Scotland. Or I kind of get confused how that is. But a community college, for anyone's listening, is a two-year school. And what that means is, like, it's your first year and second year. But then you get what we call an associate's degree, which is kind of like half of a bachelor's or half of an undergrad, which you can be a nurse with an associate's in nursing. Like, that's, I think they call them certificates here in the UK. Like, I'm still trying to get confused between the different ways that they look at it. But a lot of times when they call something a certificate in Europe, we consider that an associate's. But it's proper accreditation.
Right.
And there's a lot of lost in translation for a lot of this. But
yeah, and I would say a lot of my friends growing up had no idea what community college was, had no idea what an associate degree was. I was kind of like one of maybe like two or three other friends who got an associate degree and went to community college. Everybody else went straight to the university. So they had no idea, because universities don't give associate degrees. Only community colleges do, and trade schools. So that's kind of confusing for some, because realistically, you don't necessarily need an associate degree depending on what you're doing. It could be a faster track to get to where you want to be if that's what they require. But if you plan to go to a university and get a bachelor's degree, then it's really just kind of like getting your prerequisites in your first 2 years done at a community college for a cheaper cost in a more, I would say, flexible environment that accommodates and is accessible to a wider range of student roles. So like students who work full time, who can only go to night school or a weekend school, or single parents who need daycare services. So there's like a daycare on every campus, or students who want to get extra credits from high school. So they're in high school and then they go to college, you know, for part days. Or people who are unemployed, who are looking for employment. There's, you know, like workshops and like services specifically for that at the community college. I'm sure there are at universities too, but I've never seen them, and they've never been advertised before when I'm there, so.
And I think that's like a good thing to talk about, too, because it does get really confusing with, like, associate's degrees, because, like, I was really looking at all my degrees, and technically I think I have four, but it's, like, kind of confusing because I got 60 credits on something before my bachelor's, so now it's an associate's, but I got an extra 60 credits in another thing, so now it's a minor. But I'm like, what's really the difference between a minor and associate's when you really think about it? There's really not much.
That's true. People have a lot of questions, or I should say my students have lots of questions about this whole idea of minors and majors, and like whether they're actually like something that you have to do, because some people are under the impression that you have to have a minor, and I'm not sure why. But yeah, at least here, minors are 30-ish credits in a particular subject field. So if you want to like minor in Korean language, you know, you take usually whatever would be 30-ish credits worth, or if not of a language and like the history and other. The associate's degree, at least here, is 90 credits. So it's like a lot more.
So I think in Massachusetts, but it's 64 credits because it's 120 for your bachelor's.
Is it a semester or a quarter system?
I think it's a semester system.
Okay.
I've been out of it so long boss is listening to it right now, and he's just probably screaming.
Yeah, I should specify. So 90 quarter credits, which would be about 60 semester credits. I should specify that. But yeah, I know that does come up a lot.
No, and that it's true, because that's where looking at like the minor, I think I found the minor useful, but I think it also depends on it, because we were going to talk a little bit about exploring. And like the best thing I think about community college, where a lot of people don't realize, is community college is cheaper most of the time than a full-time university.
So much cheaper.
But the nice thing that
I can give you examples.
That should be great if you could.
Yeah, so for me, I shouldn't say for me, but right now, if you were to attend my campus and you were, I mean, it's not my campus, but you know, the campus I work at, and you were to take 15 credits, which is full-time, you know, you're going all in, you take 15 credits, you're paying about $1,500. I don't know how that translates to other currencies, but you know, $1,500 US, and then you have to add the cost of textbooks. If you were to go to a public university in the state that I live in, you're paying about $5,000 to take the same amount of credits in the same number of weeks, the same year. For me, going to grad school after the fact, which was recent, so I know it's up to date, I had to pay about $6,000 to take 10 credits, which is less. You know, the other options were for 15. But again, you know, grad school is a little bit different. So that being said, technically, you're saving like $4,000 every 3 months, at least if you're here.
No, and that's like the important thing. And my old boss, Brian, actually just messaged, and because he also works in advisory in a college in Connecticut. Mm. He says, I think it depends on the university and college and how minors are certified and accredited, which I
yes,
think
that's so true.
And I think that's a huge thing to talk about, too, is accreditation. Because for my European listeners, yes. They don't understand what accreditation means. And it's also something I think most people in high schools don't talk about either. You're in, forgive me, Washington, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So Washington is very similar to Massachusetts, where your community colleges are accredited by the same schools as the state schools. Where Massachusetts is the same way. So you don't really have to worry too much about accreditation.
To be honest, I am not sure how the accreditation goes. I just know that we are accredited, and I know which other schools are too.
But I think that's an important thing that people talk about is accreditation, because I always think of the joke of, like, Trump University. It's like, yeah, you can give him money, he can give you a piece of paper, but is it accredited? Do you mind going deep into that? Because that's something I feel like...
Yeah, I could give you examples. Yeah, I can totally give you examples. So for the college that I work at, we do not accept credits if they are not from an accredited institution. And we, not to out any school, but Pima Medical Institute, we've had lots of students come through from them and they're not accredited. And we have to tell them, like, yeah, you got the certificate to help you with your skill building so that you can join the workforce. But unfortunately, it is not accredited, so we cannot accept any of those credits, which means you have to start from scratch, which is a terrible conversation to have. And I mean, maybe they're accredited now. I haven't really checked recently, but you know, this was like last year. That particular scenario has happened quite a bit. The other one is students coming to me and talking about where they would like to transfer or the options of where they could transfer to get a bachelor degree. And I always say, make sure it's accredited. And they say, oh, what's that? I didn't know. Like, there are colleges that are not accredited or universities, and they have to go, yes. And that is a conversation that we have to go through. And here's possibly where you might find out or be able to know. And then on the flip, on the back end of things, as an advisor, I have a whole website that all I have to do is search the college name and it'll tell me. So I have like a search engine, if you will tell me which schools are and are not accredited, whether that be regional or national, which is kind of like a nice perk of being an advisor. But I wouldn't say I use it all the time, but enough.
No, and that's a really true, because it gets really confusing when I was in the military, like there was a community college right outside of base and all the guys were going to it. And I went to go look into it because my sister was in college, like right at the time. And I was like, oh, I'm going to think about going to community college. And then she said, make sure it's accredited to a school in Mass when you come back. And I had no idea. Because community colleges are great. But the difference is as we were talking about things, it's really crazy how it changes from system to system, from state to state.
Yes.
So luckily, like in Massachusetts, I think most schools there are New England accredited, which actually covers most of New England. So like when I was applying to other schools, like it didn't worry. Like I was in my community college, they had a great agreement with Curry College. So I got my associates and they took all my credits without even So like that's a nice thing. But like that's the reason like I want to press accreditation. And I know where you're coming from too, because like we don't want to be, you know, your accreditation system. I knew the accreditation system I was working in. Like I don't know another.
Yeah.
So
same.
And like, but that, I think that's an important, even though we've worked in it, because as this message my old boss went on there, I was a work study for a veteran service center. So we worked a lot with this within the VA system of things.
Oh, I bet.
And the VA is great, but you're still playing with state rules at the same time. You're dealing with accreditation rules. And I think there's a huge misconception, especially with parents. And I was talking with a few other people about this, where it's like, oh, go to college. And they send your kid to college.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure they're accredited. But it's also the same point. Mm-hmm. Like, there's this weird misconception that if you're going to get a college degree and then you're going to get a job. And I know you deal with this a lot as an advisor.
Oh my gosh,
you
had
a few stories.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All my friends, literally. And I was just talking about this the other day with another podcaster. There's quite a few things. So it's like, there's this added pressure right before you graduate, and I'm sure you can relate, where you're like, what am I going to do next? I have to get a job. I have to do something, right? In most times, your job ends up being something that you could have done without the degree. And I'm not trying to like bash on companies, but you know, like a lot of my friends went straight from graduating to working at Starbucks or Fred Meyer or Safeway. That's not like where you anticipate you would be after completing a bachelor's degree. After you spent 4 or 5 years, you know, doing this degree, you don't really anticipate that you would be someplace where you actually were before you got that degree. And finding, going through the process and the time of getting a job is like super challenging, super time consuming, and a long wait period that people don't anticipate and that schools don't really tell you about, in, at least for me. Before I graduated and then through my graduation, I was a lifeguard. Hated that job. And then luckily for me, I didn't have to wait long before I got this job. But that is a privilege in and of itself that I was able to like stumble into. Whereas some of my other friends, I mean, this was 6 years ago. And some of my friends are still in these jobs that, I mean, I know, you know, they have worker benefits and other, but you would not anticipate that, you know, getting a psychology degree, getting a biology degree, getting a business degree, et cetera, you would still be in the same place that you were in high school, which is fine, though, if that's what you're into and that's what you want.
No, and that's so true, too, because it's funny, like when I got out, I finished my bachelor's degree, and while I was still finishing, I was working for a security company. And what they just wanted was my clearance. They're like, okay, you have a military background. You know how to stand there. You know how to like take orders and wear a uniform. You've been cleared by the mm-hmm. government to do this job. And it was strange, like how many people with high-end degrees all around us had the same things. Like some of them retired mm-hmm. and other stuff like that. But like a lot of it, like I've talked about it more on my podcast and I'm not going to go too much into it. Like okay. My degree was in criminal justice. And like the fact is like, oh, you get a criminal justice degree to become a cop. But most of the time they care more about your veteran status than your degree, and like that's just an old school way of thinking. But I think it's a huge point that something I've learned, and I think something you've learned, because we both are not in fields that we studied for or thought we were gonna go for.
And
I think it's a huge thing, especially talking to like any young student, like young kids that are right now listening in our high school or parents, when your kid tells you or you're like, I want this job, I think it's really important to realize to look up the requirements for that job. Because like I wanted to be get into art crimes in the FBI. So I'm going to do criminal justice. FBI is not looking for people with criminal justice degrees. They're looking for tech people. They're looking for forensic scientists. They're looking for accountants. They're looking for lawyers. They don't hire CJ. And like I can get mad at them. Oh, yeah, and accountants. Yeah. But they're not looking for criminal justice degrees. Because there's 1,000 of us with criminal justice degrees, but we're not bringing anything else more to the table than they already have.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, that is definitely something that I personally have learned because, like I said, I stumbled into this position. And in looking at, like, future prospects and things that I might want to work up to and be in the future, because, you know, we can change our minds whenever we want, and everybody usually changes careers at some point or another. I do look at the job description. I look at what degree they want, what experience they want. And at least for me personally, as professional development, I go to my higher-ups, I should say. So like my boss and then my boss's boss is the dean. So I talk to both of them and I'm like, this is where I want to be in like 10 years. And so this is the experience that I need to get there. And so help me get that. And so they're like, okay, well, let's have you do this project or let's have you try this or let's, you know, whatever it may be. And I know not every boss is supportive of having, you know, their employees do things outside of their job description and purposely like work to improve and then, you know, eventually leave because you want them to stay, right? But I'm very thankful. And I think that is one perk of working in higher education is, you know, everybody's in college, presumably, and working in college to learn and to improve and to grow and to develop. So that's just one perk specifically for me about working in college. And we're always hiring. We've been hiring throughout the entire pandemic.
Well, that's good.
Anyway. No. Yeah, so if you're looking for a job.
Well, it's also like...
not just me.
Brian makes another good point, though, too, is like skills. And I think that goes back more to the whole entire minor issue is something that we have in the United States, which I don't think any other place does, is electives. And electives seem to be this thing like a lot of people waste them. I can tell you stories from the VA of people that are trying to get that. Because I know you've worked with veterans and you have
that happens with us all the time.
Those 12 credits to get the full time VAH.
Mm-hmm. But it's so hard,
but it's also the things like I always find it like I find electives a little strange because in the UK you can finish college easily within 3 years because if you're studying to be a doctor, why are you taking physics? No, like
why are you taking art 101?
Like it's like why are you doing this? But if you use them correctly and you do it to better yourself, you get skills. Like I took
right.
basic Arabic. I basically lost a lot of it, but I made sure to take a lot of extra sociology courses, and that's how I got my minor, and because I was actually trying to go for a double bachelor's.
Ooh.
Which sets you up. But the thing is, like, that's what set me up for my master's, because, like, yeah, you can get it with criminal justice, but I'm like, I also have a sociology background, which helped me to get into the door of human rights.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that a lot of it, fortunately, I had a great advisor when I was going through, and I kept going back to him even when I transferred to other schools. But I think a lot of advisors don't, they're just trying to set up your schedule and it's fine and not comply, because a lot of them are overworked, from my experience. I'm sure you see the same thing.
Oh, yeah. There's no room in their schedules for anything. Even athletes. I would say athletes as well. Athletes have an equally hard time finding classes as veterans, I would say, at least in my experience. Because at least, so I'll give you an example. So I had an athlete student. I'm technically not supposed to be with athletes, but when they can't reach their advisor, who else are they going to talk to? Where I had a student who said, okay, 6 a.m., I got to be, you know, like, at the gym with all the guys, we got to be doing our trainings or whatnot. And then like 1 p.m., we got to watch all of the videos of all the previous games against our opponents. And then like 4 or 5 or 6 p.m. is when we actually play and or have practice or whatnot. So really, I can only take classes between like 9 a.m. and noon or like, you know, 2 to 3 p.m. And we have multiple campuses. So like trying to do like the commute and everything is a whole nother thing. And so I primarily advise STEM. I probably should have said that first. I advise STEM, business, and healthcare students. And when you're in STEM, business, and healthcare, everything is pre-planned for you and there's not really much flexibility to change things. So for STEM and healthcare, all of your electives are just the prerequisites to get into your requirements. You need to take physics and math. Well, great, because pre-calculus is the prerequisite. And that is not part of your STEM degree, so it counts as an elective. Like, so there are things like that. So, at least for STEM, sorry, you don't get electives, even though it says you do. But yeah, with veteran students in business, because that's the only other major I really advise for, there are a lot of electives. But I usually say, take something that you will find beneficial, like work ethics, or public speaking, or, you know, something that's going to be related to your major that you want to improve on, even like ethnic studies, because you know you're going to come across a scenario like what we talked about before, so I'm not going to, you know, go into it. But there's different things. That being said, do they actually register for those classes? Most of the time, no. So I can say whatever I want to them, but whether they actually decide to believe me, trust in me, and followed my advice is a whole nother picture.
No, and that's so true. Like, you hit so many different points. And like, one thing I think that is lost, and like, you kind of hit on this like really quickly, that other community colleges have an advantage over universities, is I've never seen a college outside the universities or anything outside of community colleges that have that flexibility of day and night classes. Like, most regular colleges, like day school and night school, are actually treated as two different schools within the university structure with two different prices. So you can easily go from, if you're paying day prices, they'll gladly throw you in the night course, but if you're paying night courses, they don't want to throw you in the day course without charging you more, and they'll even structure the classes differently, strangely. But that's like a one thing, if you're trying to, like, I think people trying to dip back into school and you have a hectic schedule because you have kids or practice or you have a strange job, like, this is COVID time, so school's strange when we go back to whatever quote-unquote normal is. I like that about that, because it's like, you might only have 2 hours on a Monday evening or 3 hours on a Thursday morning. Trying to do that at a four-year school and try and set a schedule, that's not going to happen.
Correct. That is the one benefit. No, go ahead. I was just going to say that's the nice benefit of it.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It's like, it's impossible for a four-year school to do it, but you might be able to get there within a community college.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I did have a good question, though, is what is your opinion, which I didn't even think about these massive open online courses because of COVID?
I guess I would like a more specific idea of what that means, because like, just being open to everybody, like a lecture hall, but in online, like, is that what that means?
I'm assuming that was just a question. If you want to clarify, Brian, what you're asking. But it is a little strange, though, with these online, because I had to do my last semester basically online, and I did not like it.
Yeah, and it's interesting because some people actually really love it. And I'm not speaking for everybody, but usually the students who say they like it are students who thrive in an online environment and or were homeschooled. Oh, without the credits. Okay, so for us, it's kind of like community education, where you like get a certificate or take a class, but you don't get college credits for it. That's what I'm, or like a pass-fail type scenario. Okay, yeah. So, I mean, I guess it depends on like the reasoning and other for it. So, like, I would totally be into doing those just because I like the professional development and learning new skills and growing myself. And not that I actually have time though, but I guess it depends on like who else is in the room. If there are people who are taking the classes, you know, like to use for their education, for their degree, even though they're not receiving credits for it, I guess it depends on the scenario. I don't think they're a bad thing, but also I don't know in what context they're being used, or like if the universities are like profiting off of it, or if it's just for like you need these specific, you know, job skills to get into the workforce during COVID. Here are some things that you can learn, you know, that will help you get that job, you know, if you are struggling because of COVID. Like, you know, if that's the case, then yeah, totally. I believe that they are great. If it's really just kind of like a promotional thing, like, you know, because colleges and universities are a business, then maybe I'm not really for it. So I guess it kind of just depends on like the context of the question. And I've actually never heard of the two examples that you gave. So I'll have to do some more research into that. But at least, so I guess just speaking for our college, we do like asynchronous classes online since COVID, which is basically you log in whenever you have the time and here's your week's worth of assignments or readings or discussions or other, and you just turn it all in or do it all whenever you have the time. And as long as you submit it by whatever deadline is set, which I would assume would be like Sunday at 11:59 p.m. or other, then you're set and you go on to the next week's worth of work, and it doesn't open until you turn everything in. So that's how we've been doing things. And lab classes have been like Zoom formatting, I think. But I guess somebody will correct me if I'm wrong. But I don't think anybody from my college is here, so.
No, but that is a really interesting point, too, because I kind of wish we did push this. For a lot of friends, like, I've talked to about, like, wanting to get into college, it's a strange thing because people just assume you show up to college, you have an advisor such as yourself, and they tell you what you need to do, and then you go on, get this degree, and as we said, then go get a job, which is not how the system works. But college isn't for everyone, but it's, I kind of like the idea of non-accredited courses, or like, I always thought it was nice when like professors would let someone drag their friend into a class or two to see if they like the subject before they,
I like that too,
deep dive into it. Some professors are like, no, if you're not a paid student, like what they have the right to do, I guess, depending on the college.
Yeah, it's their classroom.
Yeah, like it's they're king of that domain or queen. But it is a strange thing too, because it's always strange when you have a friend to ask you, well, is this the right program for me? I don't know what works for you. And also, like, I'm still learning this, and you're expecting me to try and explain to you what this...
No, totally. Yeah. And I mean, a lot of new students will ask me, like, okay, let's, you know, register for these classes. So another thing that my college, I don't know if a lot of other colleges do, is we don't have orientations for new students. We have individualized appointments for new students. So each student has an appointment with an advisor, and that is kind of like their own tailored orientation to the college. So, you know, you go through everything based on what their specific needs and wants and desires are. And in those appointments, they'll ask like, okay, so we decided that we're going to, you know, register you for these classes and you're going to go through the step. I'm just going to talk you through it. They'll often be like, okay, I see that there's these classes, there's all these different professors. Who do I take? Who's the best one to take the class with? Or which class is the best for my major? And, you know, I can give them opinions based on what other students have told me and given me feedback on. Like, you know, I heard this professor is really good at staying after class. Or I heard this professor is really hard to get in touch with via email. Or I heard, you know, this class is really good to take before you take your prerequisite for this reason. And or, you know, this class will help you on your registered nursing license or exam. You know, so I hear things like that. Doesn't mean that I have experienced that myself and I'm the best person to ask. I just usually say like, oh, students have told me that blah. And so take that as you will with a grain of rice or more, and, you know, use that. But yeah, I do usually recommend to students like, hey, if you know anybody or you want to go talk to student life, because most people who work in that office are students as well. Or even our student ambassador who works in the advising center, you know, talk to any of them, see if they've taken the class, see if they have any advice, recommendations. Whether they do that or not, again, you know, is up to them because they have the agency to do so.
And I think that's an important thing to talk about, like, one thing I will say, like, everyone has heard of the thing, ratemyprofessor.com, but, like, mm-hmm. always take that with a grain of salt, because it's the same thing mm-hmm. with Yelp, just because if someone has a good experience, you're less, like, people that have a ton of good experiences on this issue are less likely to then go and make a comment. But people that get anger are quick to get on there and try So, have I seen some horrible ratings for Rate My Professors for professors that deserved it? Yes. But also, have I seen, like, horrible ones that there's only one horrible comment for a professor, but nothing else? But I'm like, everyone I've talked to has had a lovely time with this professor. Right. So, I think it is better to go talk to someone. I think it's also good to, which is a conversation we don't have often, is make sure when you're asking a suggestion of a fellow student, make sure it's a student that learns the same way you do or approaches academia the same way you do, because...
Or can be neutral about it.
Yeah.
I came across a student once, slightly different context. There was a student who was giving a presentation on whether high school students should do dual credits, so college and high school, or if they should take AP classes. And I really liked, and I still remember to this day, this student, because they were neutral about it, which I really loved. So they said, you know, like, I personally take AP classes because that is best for my learning style. My learning style is someone who depends on others to help me get through it. I cannot do this work by myself. I'm not good at holding accountability for making sure I get everything done on time. So having a high school teacher there with me has really helped me along. I do really good with test taking. I suck at turning in all my assignments and, like, all these things, you know? And so he was like, based on that, that is why I have decided that AP classes are best for me, not going to the college early when I'm not yet mature enough to be held accountable and be independent and other. Literally what he said. And I thought that was just so awesome, because literally everybody else was like, Rate My Professor, like, I had this terrible experience, therefore I believe in the other, right? So yeah, if you find someone like that, I think that is probably one of the best things, is just talking from your own experience and being like, this is my experience with this. You know, I don't know what your experience is going to be with it, but if you're looking for this learning style, this teaching style, this other, maybe you should talk to so-and-so who has the same thing.
I will play devil's advocate on the one side of it, though.
Okay, yeah.
You should also put yourself, or get comfortable with, not 100% putting yourself in the places that you find simple, because, like, the part of education is to better yourself, and making yourself uncomfortable is great. Like, one quote I heard from another podcast, and I can't think of it right now, but he said, like, if you are not cringing at the way that you thought about something 6 months ago, you're not progressing.
Mm.
And that can be about how you interact with other people. It's the way that you deal with solution. But the other thing, too, is a lot of people, when you start a community college and you get that associate's, like, I have an associate's and a lot of people I know, but that wasn't my first step. Like, that was the first step of many.
Right.
Because then I got my bachelor's. Now I have a master's. But when you get into the higher levels of academia or education or however you want, once you get to master's, like, it doesn't matter if I like this teaching style of this professor. It's the only professor there. And, like, luckily, like,
the only one teaching.
And if you're going to, like, Harvard or University of Glasgow, University of Edinburgh, Oxford, you want to be in this classroom because, like, the only one teaching this is the top of their field.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I can't ask them to change their teaching style for me. And also, some of them, I'm one of 300 students in that lecture hall.
Yeah, so. They're not going to be as flexible. And I totally agree, especially, so there's two things that came to mind. One was, sometimes when students tell me that they have a really hard professor who grades really harshly, like, you didn't follow this one rule, so you get a zero, which is awful and should not be tolerated. But you know that if you do the work and you get a good grade, you really, really deserve that grade. And you should be, like, overly proud that you got that grade. That being said, you know, some people need the higher grades to get into, you know, specific programs and others. So that's a separate story. But the other example was, oh my gosh, I'm going to lose it. I'll think of it later. But I had another one too, so.
No, but it'll come back. It's true what you say, because, like, one thing that kind of, like, when I came here to the UK, they have a pseudo-similar grading style, because, like, they don't do, like, A+ and stuff like that. They have, like, A1 through A5, then B1 to B3.
Oh, yeah, you told me that, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just, like, I have a C2, I have a C2 average, which is basically a C average here. But a C, by American standards, is kind of closer to a B, because, like, the way that they look at a D is the way we look at a C. They also have a bunch of other things, like, they literally have grades for zeros. Like, it goes all the way from A to F. So it's, like, because there's G's and E's and, like, there's so many other things in between. But it does recognize that, like, kids that were in my class, like, the smartest kids in my class, I don't think I saw a single person get an A1. I know a few people that get A3s on assignments, which, like, that's, like, a 98. Like, that's amazing to, like, see that you got that. But it's kind of, it also drives you for that older thing, because if you, there is that whole other idea that if you keep giving people A pluses, I know this goes back to, like, everyone gets a trophy mentality, which I'm not trying to go at, but if you always give A pluses and always go, like, this is perfect, this is perfect, the first time that student gets an A minus, it's, like, devastating, but
it kind of, also, like, they can't really improve on it. They're already perfect.
Yeah.
You can always improve.
And that's the thing about it. It's, like, I don't think, I would love to see what an A1 standard at my university was, just because, like,
me too.
Like, I was happy. Like, I flew to the moon when I got a B3, which is, like, a B- on one of my, again, like, I worked so hard for that, so.
Yeah.
Other friends I know always get B1s, but.
Yeah, and that's so interesting, too. And actually, I remember what I was going to say, and I'm just going to say it real quick because I'm going to forget the other thing I'm going to say.
That's fine.
Is it's good to be uncomfortable in class content, because students will take classes, like, about ethics or about ethnic studies or about, like sexual health or behavior, and they get super uncomfortable, or religious views, and their parents will ask me if we can take them out of the class because this one chapter covers something that they don't believe in, which is, like, you know, you should try to open your mind to see how others view certain things. Doesn't mean you have to believe in it, but just to know there are other people out in the world who don't all agree with you or believe the same things that you do. Anyway, yeah, going back to grading, that was the other thing I was going to say. Yeah, I just think that's so crazy. And I personally don't like grades. I don't, and, you know, we both have master's degrees. I went through my bachelor and master's degree without grades being considered important or necessary, which I guess is very unique for me. And I literally was just talking about this, like, yesterday. That's why it's, like, fresh in my head and I feel like I should say. So I grew, well, I didn't grow, but I went to school, and basically my entire bachelor and master's degree programs were like, we don't like grades. They don't matter here. We understand that grades matter on, like, the institutional level and that we have to give you a grade, but really it's just like we're just putting it for show. It doesn't mean anything. Like, grades do not dictate and, you know, tell you how your life is and your value in life, right? And which was great for me, because I felt like I was under a lot less pressure, less stress. I didn't have to focus so solely on always getting an A or a 4.0 for us. Doesn't mean I didn't strive at certain times to always have a better GPA. My master's program, I definitely strived to have, like, as close to a 4.0 as I could get. My bachelor's degree, I took it a little too seriously on the grades aren't important, so I didn't get as high of an overall GPA. But I still graduated and it was fine, and I still was above a B average. But it was just really interesting to see that there are other ways to show growth and progress than a letter or a number grade. And I mean, I'm an advisor, so I only see final grades. I don't see, like, progress reports or anything like that. We're not a high school, but it is an interesting conversation to talk about with students, because students, I will say, depending on what they're pursuing and depending on their background with the idea of grades, will come to me in various forms with various questions, various concerns. Like, I had one student who failed one class, and by fail, I mean, like, a C minus, and they ran to my office crying, saying, am I going to get kicked out of college because of this grade? And mind you, they took three other classes on top of this class, which is a lot. And I'm like, you did great in, you know, three out of your four classes. Your GPA is great. You know, don't stress about it. We'll just retake it and you'll be fine. The idea of grades and how important they are and how they, like, basically determine your value in education was so ingrained in this student that they just thought that they weren't going to make it and that they should just give up, which was awful. And I hate so much. And so that's just what I thought about.
So it's strange,
you talking about grades.
So it's strange that you talk about that, because, like, the huge culture shock here in the UK in academia is they have a thing about classes of degrees. So there's, like, a first class degree, second class degree, third class degree. Like, everyone makes fun of Boris Johnson because he's a third class degree. So your GPA actually is then on your degree. And, like, that actually will determine your future.
Oh, my God.
Like, you're not, if you don't have a first class degree, like, even the saying there is, like, even though this isn't true, like, if you don't have a first class degree, like, don't even bother applying to grad school, is, like, the idea, because, like, then you have the GPA. So it was always strange when my friends would ask me here, like, what's your degree? I'm like, I just have a degree. Like, I didn't understand what that was.
Yeah.
And I get it.
We're from the U.S.
But they did make a good point, though. Like, I saw, like, a Brit that went to school in America, and, like, they got, like, their degree, and they're, like, they were so disappointed, because, like, they were, like, I forget what you call it, but, like, the second, not summa cum laude, but, like, the thing right below, or not, yeah, like, the second highest.
Yeah.
And, like, they got the
mega cum laude or something.
Something like that. Ooh, and they were, like, I have the same degree as, like, the lowest person in the class thing, and, like, they're disappointed about it. And I'm, like, but, like, it's strange because I understand you work so hard for it. But it's also terrible.
It's not a competition.
But it's just when I look at, like, I had a 1.8 GPA out of high school. And, like, if I let that define me, I would not be where I'm at now. And, right. Like, my coordinator, which I guess is an advisor here in the UK, gives the great advice. It's like, because once you get master's, you just get everyone's master's look the same. Doesn't matter if you're the top of the class or the bottom of the class because you got accepted into a postgraduate system.
Like, it doesn't matter. Basically unlearn all that.
Yeah, it's strange because, like, at the end of the day, you're working for a piece of paper, and it's just interesting how they have that mentality here in the graduate level, where we kind of already have that level of, like, you always have, like, that old saying, D's get degrees, or C's get degrees, but, like, that's not a thing in, like, other cultures, and I think that was a very fascinating, you know, how you talk about it. The other thing that kind of, like, red flagged me when you talk about that is... I'm used to this from another side, so I had to, like, hold myself. I'm like, you have parents talking to you in, like, college? Like, that kind of threw me off. Like,
yeah. And it doesn't mean I say anything because, you know, confidentiality and FERPA and all that, right? But, yeah. And I think it's just because, so, I would say about a third of my entire campus is high school students getting dual credits with college. So they're going to the high school and the college.
Okay.
And I can't speak for all of them. But I would say, like, for the majority, it's they haven't learned how to advocate for their self yet, for themselves and their success. And at least where I live and, like, where I grew up, that was not something that was taught in high school or was even considered to be taught in high school. And, like, you still have to, like, raise your hand just to go to the bathroom, right? And so you can't advocate, or, I mean, you can, but you don't ever see it. You don't ever see it in practice, another. And so... a lot of parents will come to me or email or call me, even email me as the student using the student's email address and be like, you know, I have a question about this, or I have this concern with this professor or class or other or this requirement or whatever. And I try not to give anything out because, you know, of FERPA laws, right? You can't disclose the student information to another person unless you have their consent and their permission. And so I'll say generic things like, well, yeah, if you need this requirement, you know, you have all these options. Or if you have this concern, talk to so-and-so. So I don't give any direct information about the student out, but yeah, a lot of parents do reach out to me. So yeah, as weird as it may seem, and I'm sure, I hope it's different at the university level, but maybe it's because we're a community college and...
Well, the reason I thought about it, because I'm first going, like, as the adult, but I've seen it myself when I was working as a work study. For veterans, a lot of times you have, the vet themselves will come in, but, like, the wife or the parent will come in, or, like, something like that. And it's just because, but I think that's more in the engraved of the mentality of, like, U.S. military, is if you, lack of knowledge is weakness. So if you don't, the fact you're coming in to ask a question shows that you don't already know, so therefore
That's a huge thing. Yeah.
And so... And it stinks because with, like, the VA is a lot, like, other schools, like, I can't give information to them, or, like, especially the VA is very strict that you're, unless, like,
I think there's way more strict.
Like, unless they're your legal, like, the legal guardian or the legal
overseer, or, like, your voc rehab person or other.
Then they can't do it. So, like, them coming off the street and saying, like, I want to give you this information, but legally I can't. And the sad truth about this, and, like, any veterans that are listening, please learn your benefits. And, like, just because you went to steps and taps... I'm sorry to say this, they are probably 3 or 4 years out of date on that information. And I've gone to college advisors when I transferred out, and that's the reason I still stayed in contact with my old advisor, because him and the woman that worked in the thing, I just don't like using names too much because it's out there.
Yeah, no, I totally get that, yeah.
They were top notch, and they knew what it was. So even though I went to 2 other colleges afterwards, it's like, I'd deal with this advisor, and I'm like, I would ask, like, that doesn't sound right. Contact, like, my old university, like, the old college. And they're like, yeah, that's not right, that's out of date. And I think that's a scary thing is... And this isn't a knock on you in any case. Like, just requiring or thinking to, like, completely rely on your advisor, they're there to help you. But we're all human. We're all fallible.
Right.
But, like, vets really learn your benefits, because our benefits are really confusing. And just because in a different language.
Well, and there's multiple, you know, forms too, there's multiple chapters, and it's just a lot to take in, and summers are different than fall, winter, spring sometimes, and online classes are different than hybrid, which is different than in-person, and there's so many factors. They like think of every little tiny detail. And I will say, I'm not the person that veteran students go to for that specific thing. That is specifically the veteran office. I just help them navigate the benefits that, you know, they hear about from their VA person and, you know, translate that into a degree.
Which,
but yeah.
Look, I could go into a whole nother episode just talking about, like, the misconceptions that come from...
Oh my gosh, yes.
Well, my sergeant told me this. It's like, but that's great that he told you this.
And when did they go to school?
Well, yeah.
And how many years ago was this?
Or did they go to school is another, like...
yeah. Did they hear it through the grapevine, or did they actually do it?
Like, Lance Corporal Underground, it just let fastest way to get the wrong information quickly is just have a bunch of young enlisted soldiers or Marines or sailors talk to each other. And then they're coming to us at the office, and they're saying this thing that they... And then they get mad at you, which I think you probably even deal with, too, when you get kids that come from high school, like, I was told this was college. And they're like, that's not how this works. And they get mad at you because...
Yeah, you know what's funny is... I was talking about this recently with my coworker, is that I don't think students, especially veteran students, have ever gotten upset with me about any of those things. And I was like, I don't know if it's because I'm like really tiny, or like I talk in a certain way, or I look a certain way, or I behave a certain way in front of them. But I've had like plenty of examples where I'm talking like this and I'm like saying, hey, go talk to the VA office because I'm not sure, I don't know. But these are our options depending on what they say. And so let me know what they say and we can go from there. And then they go there and then I get a call or a visit to my office like an hour later saying, hey, did you know that so-and-so just started screaming and yelling at the front counter, threatening them, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm like, oh my God, I had no idea. And like I would never have even assumed, like, maybe you triggered them. I don't know, like, you know, what was going on. But it's happened to me more than once where... specifically a veteran student would be totally chill in front of me, like, thank you so much, yeah, I'll go talk to them, it'll be great, I'll come back, and I really, you know, look forward to talking to you again, and, you know, thank you, and all that. And then I hear, you know, that they were screaming at the office across the hall. So I guess it's nice that they don't yell at me and they don't blame me for anything. But yeah, I know that they do. All students do. I would say students' parents are usually the ones who are upset at me. But in my experience, they are upset, but they're not necessarily upset at me. I'm just the only person that they can talk to because I'm the only person that they know.
Well, I think it's a huge, like, the big thing about it, though, is like, because we can go like, yeah, because veteran has a culture, and you also deal with the high school teachers. I think there's like a thing that's not really spoken about is high school does not really prepare you for college.
Mm-mm.
And then you also take people that are indoctrinated to a military lifestyle and then go into college where it's like you're a lot more controlling of your own life.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's... Totally. And that's the thing, is like we do a week of SEPs and TAPS, but it's just like a week to prepare you to go through this crazy systematic system, and then they give you bad information. And then you go to a state, because like, one, it's hard for them because they have to talk about everything. And then,
oh, yes, helicopter parents.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't say that, but I was talking about helicopter. But yeah, it's... I think that's the problem, though, because helicopter parents are a new thing, too. But you're also dealing with a strange thing where I'll talk to, like, my parents about this or other people. It's the college... It's strange because I don't think high school systems have changed in the last 100 years.
It doesn't seem like they have.
But colleges are constantly changing and adapting. A little slower than we wish they would.
Yes, colleges are very slow. But at least, you know... stuff is happening. You just have to be at the college for 10 years to see it.
So I was going to give, so for anyone else that's watching, we have a good couple questions to come to you back to you afterwards. I did want to give you a moment to talk about your podcast, The Wonderful World of Disney Villains.
Okay. Yeah, so The Wonderful World of Disney Villains, you were listening at the beginning, came from me doing professional development workshops for staff, faculty, and administrators at my college talking about Disney villains as their college students and the oppressions and barriers that they would face if they were to pursue a degree in higher education. So from that, kind of, I started going into more like student life workshops, doing the same thing, but obviously instead of, you know, being students that they teach, it would be, you know, students that they have classes with. And from there, I started the podcast, The Wonderful World of Disney Villains, which was the workshop title, where I just monologued to myself about everything that I've done in regards to research, in regards to media studies, analyses, and other, because my master's degree was also, my master's thesis was about the social oppressions of Disney villains and how they often are portrayed as marginalized communities, which then thus criminalizes those communities in real life. So that was my thesis, so I kind of just monologue about that and the research behind it. The most recent episodes touch on how Disney villains are relatable, how Disney princess dating culture and dating relationships are really not realistic and probably troubling and problematic to children growing up with these expectations that Disney princess relationships are the norm and you meet the first person and you end up marrying them.
Now you're gonna get married.
Yeah, all of that. Oh my gosh. And I actually had a guest on that episode, the Damsels in the DM podcast, and they're a podcast that talks about female relationships and the stereotypes in that. And I have an episode coming out this week talking about the movie Inside Out, just the idea of how Pixar shows, you know, the idea of a child moving to a new environment and going through all these mental health processes and thinking habits and other. And I have a guest on that episode as well who actually had the exact same experience as the person from the movie. Literally traveled from the same town to the same other town, you know, grew at the same age and all these things, which is crazy. So I'm talking to them about that. And I also have already filmed another episode with the co-host of the Bechdelcast podcast talking about female representation in Disney princess films, specifically Disney villains, Disney female villains, and Disney princesses, which will be coming out in March. So I'm excited about that.
Well, that sounds that sounds amazing. And if for anyone that for listening to this not live and can't just find that, I'll definitely have you on the guest and appearances page of the Rights and Wrongs website.
Yeah.
So all your links and stuff will be up on that.
Awesome.
Because I've caught a few episodes on it, and it really does make you look at the villains in a totally different light. I know, like, the Maleficent movies kind of already did that for us.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, when you think about Ursula, or you think about the live-action version of Cinderella, I think paints the evil stepmother in a lot more interesting light.
Mm-hmm. Even Cruella de Vil, she's just like an extreme feminist who kills puppies. I'm still trying to make her seem like a better person, but I can't because she kills puppies.
But I think that's a perfect example. Is like, it's crazy when you have to look at yourself too. Like, I always love the quote that you're the villain in someone else's story. But the truth is, mm-hmm. you can be progressive in one light, or be very progressive, and then people think, like, well, I'm progressive this way, that means 100% of me is progressive. It's like, no, you can also be regressive or be very... Yeah, and, like, that's partly being human, but I think that's an interesting point about Cruella de Vil, is that she is a feminist in all ways.
A super aggressive one, too.
But then, just a puppy killer. And it's just yeah. like...
I know.
You just that one thing. But no, that is really...
Even if you watch Once Upon a Time, she was the one villain that they couldn't redeem because she kills puppies.
And it's true. But for my media input, today, the same day, like on Monday, I was a guest on the show Open Windows Culture, where I actually talked with J. Kevin Powell about a very similar issue, because he focuses his entire season on systemic racism, which is separate than systematic racism in financial institutions. And he had me on, and we talked about how the GI Bill is very... there's some racial plays into it, because some of it about not the GI Bill on the VA system itself, but like how colleges like to manipulate, and how as soon as they found out they can make money, these for-profit colleges started popping up in minority populations, and also the way that the GI Bill is written for house loans, how it only helps certain groups. And it's not it's not systematic, which is the whole entire difference, where systematic means that they purposely did the systemic norm.
Right.
They wrote a policy without thinking how it affects someone else, because the person writing it probably isn't part of that demographic.
Yeah. I have a question for you then, because you mentioned that. I was looking and I saw something that said, is society and the government going to be accepting of having free tuition? Or like free student, you know, payment for classes. And one of the things that they had said was probably not, because a lot of students, and this was their assumption, right? And this is what they were saying. And so I'm kind of curious what your opinion is. They were saying probably not, because a lot of students go into the military because of the VA benefits that they get to pursue education after or during, depending. And so I'm kind of curious, like, what your thoughts are of that statement, because I don't have any experience with that personally.
It's interesting that you've said that. One of the guys that I went to school here, he made that same comment, because I'm very much like, I think we should have free education. But he talked about, there's articles written about this, like, why the U.S. will never go because of this. And the truth is, I'm at this point where, like, I don't know, because you have many different reasons that people join the military. For me, it's it's a family obligation. All the men serve in some way. Like, if you're not the thing is that my dad was being trained to be an officer in Vietnam. His dad served as an officer during World War II. My mother's father served. Like, my cousins, my uncles, my brother-in-law. Like, my family goes back to military service all the way back to the American Revolution, and then before that. So for us, it's just kind of a, and we're not forced into it. It's just kind of a family obligation. And there's this talk of a warrior class in society, because most people that now serve in the military are usually sons or daughters of people that served. So you have that familiar obligation. Because the truth is, like, and like, before I'll get into the whole entire, like, systemic racism and financial institutions, like, I'm a white guy from a middle class neighborhood. Like, if I wanted to get college loans, I'm not going to have problems getting that. Like, yeah,
that's true.
There's, like, that's not an issue. Like, I'm already a U.S. citizen, which is another reason people join the military, to fast track green cardships and other situations. But some people do it, like, there's other benefits. Like, you do have the VA housing loan, there's entrepreneurship loans, there's better banking policies for it. So do I think it's going, would it hurt the numbers? Potentially, but there's other reasons why they join the military. And, like, some people, like, the whole entire thing about it is, like I said, I had a 1.8 GPA out of high school. I was not going to college. I needed the military. Like, I needed Bruce Drill and Chuck to scream some sense into me. And, like, whether or not it was free or not, like, I needed that part of my life to figure out structure and figure out, oh, that made me into electrical engineer, which was a skill to learn. I don't like this, which is an important thing for, I think, students. Taking a course in learning that you don't like something isn't a waste of time.
Yes. I say that all the time. If you already know what you dislike, that's great progress to knowing what you want to go into.
The problem is like, I understand that statement, and, like, I get where it's coming from, but I feel like they're trying to oversimplify a whole bigger issue, which you can talk about for hours. But do I think that might play a role into it? Yes. But at the same point, the reason I think that they don't want to make college free is you're going to see a lot more different things. Because, like, the strange thing is, like, they always claim that why college is so expensive is because, like, you need to pay for those tuitions. But these schools are making millions and millions. Actually, I think about the main reason why they won't make college free is, think about all those athletes they're not going to get, that they basically get free labor off of on the other side. Like, that's a whole entire thing I didn't do. I just think about right now, like, that's another reason that they don't want to talk about, because they're making millions of dollars off those athletes for the NCAA, but they don't see a cent of it. Like, yeah, they go to college for free, but if they break their leg, that's gone.
So, yeah. Which is awful.
I think that might be a good scapegoat argument for it, but there's a million different reasons why we're probably never going to see.
I agree.
Oh, that is true. There are a lot of in the middle of the road private schools.
Community colleges.
But the problem is, the sad thing is, those middle of the roads, the community colleges in the middle of the road, they don't have the money to affect lobbyists, which are the true way the policy goes through. But I did want to go back. Anyone who wants to ask questions, we're at the feel free. But we were kind of already talking about this. Brian asked, do you think that higher education model should be reformed?
Yes. I don't know how. Well, and it's more just because the system, the higher education system was built for a very specific demographic. And it was not meant to necessarily help, support, accommodate other demographics, right? And so even K through 12, we've all kind of assimilated to this one perspective and this one persona of what education in school is, and, like, learning styles and other, which I actually unlearned in my master's program. Just, like, you know, you sit in a chair for 6 hours. If you know, I would say militarian, but I've never experienced it, so I can't really, like, say that for sure. But people say
conformist.
Okay, conformist, where you're basically in a chair for 6 hours. You know, are lectured for 6 hours. Yes, structures. Thank you. And, you know, you have this very one way to do everything. And then, you know, go into my master's degree program, where every single class, you have the option to move all the tables to sit in a circle so that everybody can see each other and converse. You have the option of bringing yoga mats and sitting on the floor and stretching while the professor teaches. You can bring your children and play with them while you're, you know, listening. Final projects are done in forms of like dance, poetry, essays, podcasts. That's how I got into podcasting as well, and other. So like there's all these different things that I personally had to like unlearn in my master's program that I was like, I didn't realize I had assimilated to this in this way and other. So I do think that there are ways to change things up in a way that is more inclusive of, you know, people's cultures and how that, you know, obtains to their learning. Like, I feel like we talked about, maybe not, I can't remember. I think it was us where we were talking about, like, you know, some cultures, you know, don't believe in like you going up to the professor, you looking them in the eye and talking about, you know, feedback and other things. Others have no problems with it. So there's a lot of other factors that people don't assume because we're like, oh, this is how things are. This is how everything is. So if you don't do this or you don't know about this, you're the weird one out and you have to conform to it. So I think that undoing all of that, which will take a million years, would be a good thing to one day accomplish. But I know with COVID, things have been changing a lot too, because people are now learning that every child and every student has a different learning style. Wow, shocker, because we're all different.
Well, I think,
so that's been...
Well, yeah. I was going to say, I think that's one reason I kind of am a huge advocate for community colleges is community college has this interesting thing. We've already talked about it. Community college is a lot like, as you joked around on another podcast where I met you, I found out about you, mm-hmm. which is Coding Conversations, is it's a lot like the show Community, where you get people from all walks of life. And mm-hmm. I think that's an important thing because you have a lot of veterans start off there easily just because it's a little bit more. There are other older students and you do have this ease yourself into it. But
yeah.
You do have the people that are either restarting their career or someone that's starting college later or someone that's working mm-hmm. part-time. And I think that's a huge thing to get because you learn at community college, you get this skill that they don't teach at four-year schools of learning from your fellow students. Because if you go from directly from high school, which for the most part, depending on where you're from, but if you're going to a state school in the state that you grew up in, most kids there had a similar high school experience.
Right.
And then you're going to a college. At a similar age. And then you're going to a college and you're all getting, none of you have really that much different. Like, yeah, there's different personality. Everyone's different. But you haven't experienced different life, which I'm sure you even like noticed in master's, it's totally different because like I'm studying human rights. There was only 3 or 4 Americans in there. Crazily enough, all of us have criminal justice degrees, but we focused on different things. But like I had my military background. The other ones are focused more on law. And then we had a guy that used to do business from LA that was Scottish. We had a human rights lawyer from Southeast Asia. We had people from India and all this. And you're learning different aspects and different cultures. We had a lot of people mm-hmm. from Finland, some people from the former Soviet Union that grew up during that. So you're getting all these different aspects. And you're learning to learn from each other and learn as a group. And I think that's a huge thing where I already had that, understood how to deal with that from community college, where I don't think some people might not know it. If like they've done is went from high school to a 4-year college and went straight into a master's. And I know some fellow students, when they're in the master's program, they thought it was so strange how some of us had community, because a lot of us started college in a later point of our lives. So mm-hmm. we're not scared of the professor because we respect them for their achievements, but they're just another human.
Yeah. And they tend to be the same age, if not younger than you.
That's always an interesting
dynamic. But I wrote like a whole list of things, and that was definitely, I think, one of the benefits and the perks is you do get to meet everybody. You do get to see all the perspectives. I feel like when you only grow up with and converse with someone who is the same age in the same town as you, it's really hard to see other perspectives, to see other types of news, to see other things, because you're basically filtering everything that you see, hear, learn, etc.
And I think that's like another interesting thing coming from the US to the UK is one thing I found is like whenever I hear UK people complain about their dormitories, I don't know what they're complaining about, because they basically get suites. They have a bedroom to themselves with a kitchenette and their own bathroom. Like that's if you stay that's the college accommodation.
It's basically like a Disney film.
Yeah, and that's the thing about it. And like it's actually still cheaper than the US accommodations, which you're stuck with someone else's in a roommate and you're sharing a shower with everyone else. And, like, they don't have really meal plans there because it's like, you have a kitchenette. Like, you're coming here to learn to be an adult. Cook for yourself. Work out.
Right.
Like, you have your own bathroom. Like, you're here to be, like, you're paying us money to have a place. Like, we're going to make sure you have a desk. You have this.
Oh, gosh.
Like, and, like, you teach this at a younger age. But it's also crazy to me, too, because it's not uncommon to have a first year, what we call freshman, be 16 years old or 15 years old. Because when you're doing your finish in school, if you get accepted to a college, they're like, okay, or a university, like, you're going there.
Yeah,
you got accepted.
Seeing that.
Like, go there. And
I wish.
But it is another interesting thing we're talking about, because I like that idea, like, you have this olderness to it, but it is a strange how American universities talk about restructure. I don't think it's just in the traditional sense of education, but, like, you're an 18-year-old, like, you're old enough to vote, you're old enough to join the military, you're not old enough to drink or something, but that's a whole other statement. But you're old enough
to still do it.
Yeah, you're old enough to do all these other things, but they still treat you as if you're in high school.
Yeah.
And they get mad at you.
And even...
Sorry.
Yeah, and even at the college... No. I mean, even at the college, it's the same thing. When we have high school students who are doing the dual options, you know, they're 16, 17 years old. Technically, they're not considered an adult, but in a college setting, any student who's a college student is considered an adult and is treated as an adult, which means no parents. So students and parents have a hard time with that dynamic where you basically are cut off from having your parents do everything for you. Not that every student has that, but a lot of students do, where, you know, the parent is the one who did their admissions application and actually put their own name instead of the student's name. And there's a whole thing to fix. That's happened to me 3 times now. Or they turn in all their forms for them, or they pay everything for them, which, you know, I totally get the payment part, but register for their classes for them, even though I'm the one who taught the student how to register. Like, there's all these things because they're 16, you know, and I feel like high school teaches you kind of to be really dependent, right? But also, like, trying to put in your mind that you should also be independent and that we are empowering you to be independent, but not really, because we don't teach you, like, how to pay your bills and how to budget and how to be financially literate and how to, you know, write a resume. And I can go on and on and on, because I learned that my high school did nothing to prepare me for life. It only told me that I was going to go to college. That was it. Didn't even tell me how to prepare for college.
Well, I was fortunate.
But I'm not speaking for every school.
Yeah, like, I was fortunate to go to a school that did both academic and trade, and they did teach us how to balance a checkbook and how to write a resume. But the other thing I always get so annoyed about, because I'm in the job hunting set right now, is every single time you meet a resume guru, they're going to look at your resume like you're doing it completely wrong. You rewrite it for you, you show it to another resume guru, and they do the same thing. It's just...
Yeah, that's the same with any, like, writing tutor, too, I feel like. Anytime I, like, went to have someone help me with my personal statement, every person that I saw would, like, edit it differently or format it differently. And you're like, just give me a generic feedback, please.
No, the worst part, though, too, is when you get professors that give you too generic a feedback. Like, this needs to be approved, but, like, how... I know, and, like, I think that's a really, it's a great question that was brought. Like, do we think, like, we need to, I think everyone thinks that, like, higher education needs to be remodeled, but how is the question?
Yeah, that's the hard part.
Because the UK does some great things that I really appreciate. Other things I don't like is there's a lot of gatekeeping here, because if you don't speak the speak, you don't know what you're talking about, where the US culture is, like, if you can't explain it to a person on the street, you don't understand it, but here it's like, you have to use the big fancy words and language.
Yeah, if you don't know the terminology, you're screwed.
I think that was my first semester, was just stuck in textbooks and, like, dictionaries. Like, I don't know what this 27-letter long word means, but it made me a better researcher.
No, I have that issue all the time where it's like, what degree am I really pursuing? And, like, so for us, as an example, we do not have what students want, which is a general degree. Like, we have it, it's called the Associate of Arts degree. However, all these different majors fall into the Associate of Arts degree, and at least for us, we do not say students are undecided. We say they are exploring this other career path. So when students are like, what do I tell financial aid, the veteran office, what do I tell them that I'm doing? And it's like, example would be like, oh, you're doing an Associate of Arts degree, you're exploring a social science career path, or a STEM career path, or a business career path, healthcare, whatever it may be. Or, you know what you want to do. Let's say you're doing psychology, you're pursuing the Associate of Arts degree with an emphasis in psychology. But really, when you get the degree, it only says Associate of Arts degree because you're putting all the psychology classes into that degree because you can tailor that degree to whatever you need it to be, which for you is psychology. And having that conversation, and I don't even know if I confused you, but having that conversation a million times a day, every day, is like the hardest thing because they still don't get it. And I mean, maybe I'm just not a good teacher because I'm an advisor, but I'm like, I really don't know how else to explain this to you. I even have the worksheet for you so you can look at it. And I'm showing you this is the degree and all the requirements. And these are all of the classes that you need for your major. And this is how all those classes fit into this degree. I don't know how else to say it to you. And so at least for me, like that whole like terminology and I guess it would be like our community college buzzwords is so hard for students to wrap their brains around. And it's this idea of guided pathways and everybody's on a path. And even if you stray from the path, you don't have to start over because you're already on the path and you're taking classes towards this path. Unless you switch paths, you don't have to start over because you're already taking classes towards one of these, you know, careers in this path.
So I think, no, it's, you didn't lose me in like, you're explaining it very well, but the funny thing is I'm trying to think about it through like the VA spectrum and like other things because like
yeah I'm oh and that's hard too
because like I'm just trying to think about like everything my advisor was telling because the problem is like you only have 36 months of the GI Bill if you're using chapter 33, but if you're using chapter 31 yeah. That's a little different, but you have to get that, like you have to use the 36. Luckily I had enough left over to kind of use on my master's, but now you're also talking about National Guard where you only get 120 credits in the Massachusetts National Guard GI, they think. So that's just enough to right. get a, if you don't like fail barely. Any classes. That's just like the bare
right,
minimum.
Yeah, that's a big thing, yeah.
And the other
you don't fail anything.
And that's the funny thing too, is like with the GI Bill, people don't realize it's better to fail than to withdraw. Because with the GI Bill, if you fail the course, they'll repay for it one time and not ask for the GI Bill money. Like the housing.
And it replaces back. Your grade, yeah.
It replaces your grade, but if you withdraw, you owe all that money for that class back plus the BAH. But it affected your GPA the same way. The only difference
and that's
is
why people need to learn to ask. You gotta ask questions.
But and then,
otherwise
I think that,
you wouldn't know that.
And I think that's the hard thing because I was going to ask you, and I remember on the questionnaires I sent you about like gap years, and it's just like one question
yes.
I want to ask you now. Going back to your 17-year-old self before you were trying to figure out before college, I guess for me that's like my 21-year-old self. What advice would you give yourself before you got into the your higher education?
Oh, so you know what's interesting is I was already decided by 17.
Or you're like my sister.
I had my life set, and then I did take gap years though between my bachelor and master's. I took gap years. So let's see. So when I was 16, I did a lot of high school activities. So I was like on leadership, and I was like the manager for different sports, and I was on step team and like ESL club and community service clubs and every like everything I could get into because I really like the social parts. But I realized when I was 17 that I was always sticking with the community service groups because I really liked helping other people and I really liked talking to other people, which was kind of funny then because I wasn't really like a like someone who would talk to strangers at that point, and I didn't like public speaking and other, but one-on-one, like I would totally be like, yeah, I'll go to the Christmas Santa workshop and I will hold the bag for whatever family, you know, needs it and while they put toys in for their kids. And I'll just talk to them while they walk through. I'm good with that. I like that. And so 17, I went and did Running Start, which is the high school college dual option after failing AP classes. So I found out I was not into AP classes. Got an A in my AP English class. I only got a 2 on the AP English exam, which was super sucky, but so I did Running Start. I got A's in everything. So I was like, obviously, I'm more meant to do assignments than test taking, which is fine by me. And I knew then that I wanted to do something that involved helping people. And someone had told me you could do social work. I was like, oh, what's that? I don't know. And basically, it's you help people, and it's a very broad degree, so you can go into like almost any field with it. I was like, great. And so I was at the community college taking the prerequisites to get into that program. Luckily for me, I got into that program, went through it, done. I applied to go to straight to a master's program. I was denied. They told me that my intro to social work class was too low of a grade to get into this program, but I could do like the full 2-year program, but I already did one of the 2 years, so I was like, no. So I started working in this job that I'm in now. 2 years later, I decided to go back to school, and I kind of changed my perspective. So at first I was like, I just want to help people, you know, but then I kind of changed perspective and was like, actually, no, I want to do more of like the ethnic studies, working in some kind of diversity, inclusion, belonging on campus type of frame, which I would not have come to if I was going straight into a master's out of a bachelor degree. So for me, it really worked out. A lot of students I meet who take gap years and come, you know, to community college like 5-10 years after high school, they say, you know, coming out of high school, I had no idea what I wanted to do. Didn't go to college because I didn't want to waste money on something that I would change my mind on. And now that I've been in the workforce, I know I don't want to be here anymore. So I'm going back to school for this thing that I know I want to do. Or I'm going back to school for this area because it's in demand and I know that I'm really good at it, or other. So in my experience, both personally and professionally, I find that gap years are great. The issue that I come across with gap years with students and giving them the option of gap years, or, you know, saying, you know, you could always do this, is the social piece of it, where students say, but my friends are going to college. If I take a gap year or years, then I won't graduate with them. That's literally the major, and that's a terrible reason to not do a gap year. But that is the most, like, the only answer I ever get of why someone doesn't want to do a gap year.
But I think that's, like, all about relativity, because, like, that's all the world and society that they know. Because it's interesting, I took a gap year between bachelor's and master's, but that's because, like, I finished my bachelor's degree. Because I just pushed right through, because it's like I started criminal justice, I'm going to go through with it. Realized, like, going through a few job applications and the systems, and, like, that's where I talk about a lot of the interesting things that I think there's problems with the hiring practice. I realized I don't really want to be a part of a system, because everyone's like, oh, you can fix it within, and it's like criminal justice is not one of those. But I took a year and I was working through security, and, like, my friend contacted me about that she was going to this University of Glasgow for her English master's. And I'm like, you know, I'll look into it, and I looked at the programs, and the funny thing, we're talking about electives, and, like, you could talk poorly about electives and positively about electives, but human rights caught my eye, but that was because I took an elective about human rights at Bay State College. And I was like, I really enjoyed that course. I really enjoyed a lot of it. Like, I've taken some time away from it, and, like, that was one of the courses that really stuck with me. And, like, that's how I got into it. So it is interesting with the gap year, because I'm like, clearly I don't want to go into law enforcement right now in this aspect of it. I really do enjoy advocacy when I was working with veterans. So maybe I like being a human rights advocate. So, like, it's interesting how, and I don't want to say, tell anyone, like, oh, I got my degree in criminal justice, like, oh, that was a waste. And it's like, no, I don't think any education is a waste. I still use the stuff that I learned, and clearly, like, a lot of diversity, understanding, civil rights is similar to human rights. But you still can transfer those skills that you learned over.
Right. And
one thing, it's like, I learned things about criminal justice education that I didn't like. I found a lot about stuff that I did like, and that helped me readjust. And the next step was master's. I could have just gone back, and, like, a lot of people don't realize, it's like, if you finish your degree, it's always easier to get another bachelor's degree because, like, you already did most of the prerequisites.
Right.
Like, I could go back, and you keep easily getting bachelor's degrees, or just do a master's, which takes a year. But I think that's something people don't talk about.
No, because nobody wants to go back. Usually. People are like, 4 years max is what I want to spend in school. Well, bachelor degree nowadays takes 5 years, so 5 or 6. So that's always an interesting conversation too, and especially with the VA. But yeah, no, I totally agree with that.
No, there is so much more, and also dealing with STEM. And
yes, oh my gosh.
I get into conversations with people about this all the time too, because people, like, we are talking about how we don't learn resume writing in high school, and we don't learn this, and we don't learn civics, and we don't learn that. But it's also, like, I feel bad going back to the high school level, is you hear people, why aren't you teaching the kids this? Like, when I was a kid, I learned this and this. And it's like, yeah, but the math that you need to know to get, like, an associate's degree in, like, computer engineering now was the math that you probably needed to get a PhD in this field, like, 30 years ago. So, like, you can't.
Yeah, technology is so different.
You have to, like, understand your math to, like, in, like, maths and sciences are taking over, because if you don't have a decent grasp of science or mathematics, And it's like, yeah, 2 plus 2 you can use a calculator for, but, like, you still have to know the algorithm to put into the calculator.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. That's a whole conversation I haven't heard, at least in a lot of education. It's like, we're expecting these high school students to come to college and learn all this stuff, and then right. We're like, well, you didn't have a choice in how to control your life or ever make a decision up to this point, and now you have to make the most important decision that will define the rest.
Right away. We need to know now. Urgency. No, yeah, totally. And it's funny because, so majority of the students on my caseload are high school students. And like I said, I'm primarily the STEM advisor. Like, the person you come to for anything STEM is me. And so whenever I do these, like, new student appointments or orientations, the front desk tries to, like, filter and assign student to advisor based on area of interest, which is funny because they don't necessarily say that they want to do STEM, but they're still given to me anyway. And so I'll ask them, and what's interesting is when they always say engineering, and I'm like, do you know what engineering is? And they always say no. And so it's like, let's talk about what engineering actually is and the different, you know, there's many different varieties of engineering. Or are you interested in computers or math or physics, astronomy? Like, there's all these options. And yeah, it is interesting. I will say, though, at least in my immediate area, so a lot of people don't know that usually you have to do English and math placement, sometimes foreign language, depending on where you're looking at. And we recently changed our English and math placement to be both more accessible, but also more inclusive, I would say. So it doesn't necessarily ask you, like, all these equations and to solve them and whatnot, but it more says, like, what was your last math class? What grade did you get? How long ago was it? And it kind of calculates based on that, this is where you should maybe start, or this is maybe how much you still remember, or, you know, review or whatnot. And then from there, the student actually gets to choose. So it'll say, you can take any of these classes, and then the student will pick which one based on their level of comfort and other. And it'll recommend, like, based on your area of interest, you should start with one of these classes. And so then it'll, you know, but then they talk to me about that too. So having that has been really helpful for me, at least, to be like, you know, with STEM, you have to do pre-calculus, calculus, you know, differential equations, linear algebra, and you just keep going and you never end. And you basically take math the rest of your life in education. And so, like, breaking it down with them. And healthcare is actually kind of similar depending on what you're looking at. But a lot of the high school students that I see actually place directly into calculus, which I find really interesting. And they do really well in it, which is another interesting thing, which I didn't see before. Before it was like, oh, you are pre-calculus and you got to work your way up through it if you want to do STEM or other. And so a lot of times students will just explore, like, okay, well, let's just try calculus, see how it goes, maybe chemistry, maybe physics if we're still feeling it. And surprisingly, no, I shouldn't say surprisingly, but I would say a lot of students do actually like it. And it's like your example with the electives. I had a student who said, I hate sciences. Sciences are the bane of my existence in high school. And then they took chemistry at the college level and they're like, oh my God, I love this class. I love sciences. And it was, you know, because of the structure of the class, the flexibility, the accessibility, and the professor totally changed their perspective. I'm not bashing on high schools, but I'm just saying, you know, try things.
I think it's also funny, too, because, like, college and, like, people that are walking out of academia don't understand. Science is a very broad term, because, like, I had the thing, mm-hmm. is, like, I took mostly physics in high school. But, like, my sister has a biochem, one of her bachelor's in biochem, and, like, my mom understands chemistry, and I'm like, how hard could it be? It's just a science. And I took college chemistry without ever taking high school chemistry.
Oh.
Yeah, luckily one of my friend's wives is a high school chemistry teacher, and I just gave her lots of bottles of wine and sat down and did all work with me. And my sister came over and did the... So, that's the thing, is like...
Oh, you were lucky.
Yeah, I was lucky, but, like, I scraped by that course. But then I just, like, I'm gonna take physics, and, like, I was fine the next, but, like, it's interesting, people were like, I like to talk about the bane of my existence being math. Or stuff like that. And it is funny because you do have to get away from a lot of it. Like, I chose math when I was in community college, statistics when I was there. And I'm like, I'm never going to touch math again. I'm just going to take statistics because I might use it in my field. I am so happy I did because I had to completely rechange my dissertation because of COVID because I wasn't allowed to do human subjects.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, I had to do t-tests. And so here I'm teaching myself without access to a professor or anything how to do a statistical t-test. When I haven't even seen, like, a bell curve in 4 years, you never know when the stuff's going to happen. So STEM is very important. And it is also interesting to talk about medical students, because we did talk about accreditation for a little bit. And this is another reason, it just popped in my head, but if like anyone here is trying to get like into medicine or anything, academic accreditation and medical education can be different accreditations. Like, I've known schools to lose their nursing accreditation because, like, a high failure rating. And, like, if you're in that school where that, like, that could be a problem. So you need to really watch what your school that you're going to is known for. Because just because they have a nursing program and they're really good school, which they could be, they can lose their accreditation in a second. And that's very terrifying, but you need to know it.
Yeah, you got to look at the school and the program degree, which sucks, but you got to do both. Which usually you have to apply for both anyway, in some instances.
Yeah, nursing's huge on that.
Yeah, nursing, I'm sure dental school, pre-medicine, I'm sure they all are. But yeah, I mean, even social work was, at my university, social work was considered healthcare, funny enough. I would see it more as a social science, but in the way that it was formatted and everything, it was the healthcare field.
It's probably because you're dealing with a lot of human subjects.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, we didn't really do a lot of research specific, but yeah, working in the community a lot with homeless shelters, HIV AIDS clients, all this stuff. And we even had seminars where we would be partnered with a dental student, a medicine student, a pharmacy student, a nursing student. So we'd have one of everybody in a group and we would do like scenarios together. Like what would the dental student do in this scenario? What would the social worker do in this scenario? What would the, you know, how would you help? How would you all help together? How would you all work together, excuse me, to help this client? Which was actually really nice. But I didn't go into healthcare, so it didn't help me in that respect, but it did help me see the bigger picture.
But I think that's like a good point, too, to also talk about is like your degree never really is going to define where you're going to go from. Like, yeah, I'm an example where I studied criminal justice and then got into human rights, which doesn't seem like a crazy leap. But most people that I talk to that go into law and stuff like that for a lot of degrees, most of them never took a pre-law course. And a lot of them say that's probably a bad thing because you're competing against other people than most of them have, kind of like the FBI scenario.
Well, some places don't even have those, too.
Yeah, like, I think like Vermont, you don't even need a law degree to practice in the entire state.
Yeah, we don't have a pre-law program that I'm aware of, so usually people do political science.
But that's another thing is just because you started one thing, like I know a lot of accountants that have gone into law. I've known a lot of doctors that like medical students have gone to because they want to get in a specific form of it. And so I know we're trying to scare people like, oh, we should figure out where we're going. It's a gap year. It's like even if you go back into school right away and you don't like what you're doing, it's not going to dictate your future.
Right. Even if you do get that degree and you choose a different career, I mean, it works. We have so many, I mean, college advising probably not the best example, but like in college advising, I have a degree in social work and cultural studies. A lot of my coworkers have degrees in psychology. I have a coworker who has a degree in academic advising, which is funny because it's a science degree in academic advising. And then I have other coworkers who have a degree in business, who have a degree in STEM. I have a coworker with a degree in biology or chemistry, and they're an academic advisor, and they don't really advise STEM because they ended up working in early childhood. No, education. They ended up working in education, and they originally used their degree, but then they didn't, and so now they do education majors and STEM majors, something like that. So there's all these different things. I mean, I see people who purposely are going towards something specific, and then they change. The most common one for me is business and nursing, funny enough. Everybody says, I'm going to do business or nursing. I haven't decided yet. Those two degrees only have two, maybe three classes in common, English, math, and a science.
Two, right?
Yeah. And then every degree needs a science class. So you can't really get out of that. But yeah, I mean, there's so many variations. Just because you have a degree in something doesn't mean you go into that, which I feel like is hard to grasp.
Well, it's also funny how you joked about like the academic school, academic advisor in science, because it's also crazy too, where you look at what your degrees are and they make no sense. Like one of my criminal justice degrees is a science. The other is a liberal art. My degree in human rights you'd think would be politics or like law, but it's science, and it's just, that's a whole entire another confusing language that they just decided on there, and you don't know.
People are very competitive about that, and very I don't know the word, but it's kind of like when people say, oh, community college is not real college. People are the same way about Bachelor of Science versus Bachelor of Arts degrees, which is so silly to me. It's like, I think someone had told me once, multiple students have told me, like, oh, I'm coming here so that I can attend real college next year or something. And I'm like, what do you think this is? You're getting college credit. You're going to transfer it. You think that you're not getting college credit? You know you're getting college credit, which means we're a real college. So stop saying that. The other thing is, I remember someone telling me, because they asked what my degree was in, I said Bachelor of Arts. And they were like, basically for, like, I can't think of another word, but basically, for lack of a better word, and excuse my language, just shitting on me, saying like, oh, Bachelor of Science degrees are like the real degrees or something. And I'm like, what do you even know? You don't even have a degree yet. Like, you, what can you say? You're a first generation college student. Stop. But I'm an advisor, so I can't say those things, but I was just internally, I'm like, how do I explain this in a way that doesn't make me sound upset?
Well, it's also scary too when you talk about like the real college idea too, because I kind of was talking about this with Jake Heaven on the other thing, where it gets scary.
Yeah.
Where when people hear community college, like, oh, community college in a real school, oh, but the school that's like down the street, that's a private school, like it's for profit, so that must be a real school. It's like, no, just because it's a private school doesn't necessarily mean it's a better school,
right?
And I don't think a lot of people
even know it's more expensive.
And I don't think people even know the difference between private and for profit. Like, oh, all private schools are for profit. No, they're not. Like, it's. And I think that there's a whole language that isn't taught that I think is also very dangerous. We talk about, like, what is a real college? And it's, accreditation is the huge portion of it. But I think we've been on here a while. Like, we could keep talking for another 3 hours, I feel like. But I was going to ask, do you have any closing statements or anything you feel like we didn't touch on? Or
I guess I could just say all the great things about community college.
Go for it.
Community college is not like the TV show Community, although it kind of is. I feel like the show Community is like high school activities, but with community college students, because you're not going to play paintball throughout the entire campus. That's just not going to happen. I wish it would. But flexible scheduling. So community colleges have night classes, weekend classes, online classes, hybrid classes, all types of classes. You save more than half on tuition. At least in Washington, you will, if you were to attend. Also, shout out that my college is top 5 in the nation. Just saying. Woo. Access to community resources. So anything from like shelter, housing, transportation, unemployment, food insecurity, childcare, healthcare. If you need law or legal services, LGBTQIA services, mental health services, emergency funding, all that fun stuff. Community colleges got you. I'm sure universities do in some capacity as well, but I would say I usually have those conversations more with community college students. And if you need to start over, great place to do it. We do not look at your grades or your test scores. at least in Washington, we don't. We accept any and all students. So a lot of students will come having a crap high school GPA and crap SAT, ACT scores. They'll be accepted. They do great because there's no social drama, ideally, at a community college, because it's not high school, right? And so a lot of my students have told me that they had a crap GPA in high school, crap test scores in high school, and then they just thrive and did well and are now trailblazers in community college and are getting that 4.0 GPA. Not saying that 4.0 is everything, of course, but you know, they're doing great, and they're using that to then go into the university, because as a transfer student, they only look at your community college grades. They stop looking at high school. They don't even ask for your test scores, because the test scores only show your readiness for college. If you already show that you're ready for college by going to community college, boom, you don't need test scores. And you get to meet people from all walks of life, which we talked about earlier, if you were listening. No, so those are just some of my, yeah.
I completely forgot about it, because I've never taken an SAT. I realized I'm like,
oh, really?
And it's funny, too, because when I went to my 4-year school, I never handed my community college my high school diploma, because they just accepted my discharge papers in the military, because you can't join the military without a GED or high school diploma. So like, oh, clearly you have that. So I went through like 3 different colleges, and like I had to track down my high school diploma, like going digging through boxes in my parents' garage, because I had no idea. But it is interesting, because you don't have to take SAT scores, and it's like strange to think about. Like, I've gone to some really nice schools, like high-end schools, like never took SATs, never had to stress myself out over.
Yeah, I took it for no reason, apparently, because all I did was send in my college transcript from community college. That was my application.
But I did want to say thank you so much for being on. If you want to hear
more, thank you for inviting me.
From Katie, like, I'll definitely have it linked for the wonderful world of Disney villains. Well,
yes.
I always like it when you're one of my guilty pleasure podcasts now, just because of the craziness.
Yay!
But if you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting us. You can buy some cool mugs and hats and now a t-shirt on the website. We also have a Patreon at patreon.com Rights and Wrongs Pod. You can also donate, but also check out our website at rightsandwrongspodcast.com. We have articles that are written about by people like you, because I don't write, because you hear my voice every week, so you don't need to hear me anymore. And if you disagree or agree with anything, write an article of what we said, or email me. We'll gladly have you on the podcast and have your voice heard, and get a hold of me at rightsandwrongspodcast@gmail.com. So thank you for listening, and have a great day.